We had to pick a topic, a text-based topic, that would work out well with a few classes, so we decided to go with Sefer Shoftim. A little bit of background, so after the Chumash, Moshe dies at the end of Zosa Bracha, and directly after that is the book of Yehoshua. After Yehoshua dies, there is no strong leadership for some time. So that's called the period of the Shoftim, where there's a pattern which takes place where no one's in charge, things go wrong, Bnei Yisrael pray to Hashem, Hashem puts someone in charge, things are all better, that person dies, nobody's in charge, things go wrong, they pray to God. That's the whole book. I don't want to ruin the ending for anyone who doesn't know it, but that's the sum of the time of the Shoftim.
Is this a random thing for Shoftim kids to be in charge after Yehoshua, or was it...
I mean, after Yehoshua passed on, there wasn't any strong leader who was there. Now, Yehoshua never really finished his job, meaning that in the days of Yehoshua, the entire land of Israel was supposed to be conquered and divided. Yehoshua was not successful in doing that. Therefore, the land of Israel was not only inhabited by Jews, the Bnei Yisrael, but there were many of the original seven nations that were still there, that were still making trouble. Again, the combination of foreigners living in Israel and no strong central leadership led to problems. I can't imagine where. So, these Shoftim, many of them are well known. Shimshon was a Shoftim, for example. Yiftach, read about very recently in the Haftorah, was another one of the Shoftim. Ehud. What? This week we're going to read about Devorah. Devorah, we figure so. What we'll do is we'll take some of the various Shoftim, or Shoftos in this case, and we will just go through them. Each story is between one and three prokem. It's a good amount to do in an hour, and based on the text together with some source sheets, maybe we'll get a little bit of a deeper understanding of the story. So we're starting in Shoftim, whoever has one, in the fourth parak. Is there anyone who wants to read, or should I just do the honors? Thought so. So, we got a parak dalad, as they announced in Shul, it appears right after parak Gimel, before parak Hay, in the stone edition, Chumash, whatever. So, as you would guess, the parak begins, Vayosifu b'nei Yisrael aso sarah b'nei Hashem ve'ehud meis. And Ehud, the previous Shoftim, dies. Ehud was the lefty, in case anyone remembers that story. And now, of course, nobody's in charge, so we have problems once again. Vayimkareim Adonoi b'yad yovin melech kinan, asher morach b'chatzor, v'sar tzvaos sisra v'hu yoshei b'charoshes hagoyim. So now, Yavin, the king of Canaan, who was ruling from Chatzor, takes over, and his generals are a fellow named Sisra, who lived in a place called Charoshes HaGoyim. Vayis'aku b'nei Yisrael el Adonai, ki tshah me'oz rechav barzelo, hu lachatzes b'nei Yisrael b'chazka esrim shana. And of course, as we said, the next thing that happened is b'nei Yisrael cry out to Hashem, because this Sisra, the general, has 900 chariots, which is a formidable number. If you remember, Mitzrayim had how many? Well, even if you don't remember, they had 600, correct? So this is 50% more than Mitzrayim had. So this is an impressive number. And they have now been in charge for 20 years, and they were oppressing the Jewish people. So what's the next part of the cycle that's going to happen? So we already had, the people have done bad, someone else comes in, they cry out to Hashem, it's time to provide somebody to come to the rescue. Who is this person? Pasuk Dalet, Udvora Isha Nevia, Eshes Lapidos, he Shoftes Yisrael Beisayim. And Devorah was a Nevia, she was a prophetess. She was the wife of a fellow named Lapidos, and she was the Shoftet in those days. To get a little bit of a background to Devorah, let's take a look at the source sheet number one, the Yalkut Shimoni, which is a Medrash on Shoftim. Turn to the Ve'eliyo, Amu, Baruch Shal Devorah, Am Ha'aretz Hayim. Devorah was married to a man. This Lapidus was an Amoritz, a very simple man. He was not a Talmud Chacham. He did not know how to learn. Amorei, bo v'aselcha psilos v'lech leveis hamikdash shebeshira. So she said, tell you what I'm going to do. In the Mishkan, in Shiloh, they had a menorah. Among the things you need for a menorah is wicks. I will make those wicks and you will deliver the wicks. Why? By doing this meritorious act, by making my deliveries to the Beis HaMikdash, you yourself probably would not merit Olam Haba because you don't learn Torah. However, I will give you the opportunity to do it through this. So she decided to help out her husband in this way. That's what would happen. She would make the wicks and he would deliver them. And the schar he got from delivering the wicks was great. The Gimel Shemos Yeshlo. And her husband had three different names. Barak, Michael, Lapidus. Besides being called Lapidus, as we see from this pasuk, he was also called Barak, which is important, and Michael, which is less important. Barak, why is it called Barak? What does the word Barak mean in Hebrew? Anybody? Modern Hebrew? Lightning, correct. Barak Shesheshe, pun of Domos Lil Barak. His face looks like lightning. I have no idea what that means. Don't even bother. Michael, Asher Memechet Asmo, it's called Michael because he would keep himself low. Dov Acher Al Shem Malach, who was named after the Malach Michael. Lapidus Al Shem Shem Ishto Osef Silos. So Lapidus, what's a lapid?
A torch.
So, right. So, why is it called Lapidus? His wife would make wicks, and he misgonenes Osef Silos Avos. She made particularly thick wicks. Kadeshiye Oren Maruba. In order that they would cause a great light, Vakash Baruch Hu Bochim Libos Ukoyos. And God knows what people are thinking. Amar La Devorah said, Devorah, Atnis Kavanta Laharbos Ori, you wanted to spread my light. Afani Arba Orech, the Yehuda Vishwalayim Kenegad Yud Beishvatim. I will make you as well known, your light will spread throughout not just Yehuda Vishwalayim, even to the 12 Shvatim. So we learn from here a few things. One is that Devorah's husband was not the brightest fellow, wasn't the big Tal Chacham, but she cared for him in a very good way. She wanted what was best for him, and for this she was rewarded with being the Navi. And second, which might be more important going forward, is the idea that her husband Lapidos had another name called Barak. And we'll see why that's very important, the fact that she was married not just to Lapidos, but she was also married to someone named Barak. Let's move on a little bit to the next pasuk, which is a very important pasuk. Pasuk, eh?
Okay.
Sure, please. You brought enough for everybody.
Yeah, okay.
Pasuk, eh? V'hi yosheves tachas tomer Devorah, Bain Haramah Ubain Betel, Bahar Ephraim, Vayal Alel Bnei Yisrael Lamishpat. So she would sit under this palm tree, known as the Tomer Devorah, it's a famous sefer by the name. It was between the Ramah and Betel, it was in Hari Ephraim, that's where it was located. She was located in Ephraim, keep that in mind. Vayal Alel Bnei Yisrael Mishpat. And people came to her, why? To judge. She was a judge. This, of course, raises a very important question. Could a woman be a judge? Is this allowed? So there are no less than five different Tosfos that deal with this question. The very important question of, are women allowed to be judges? So Tosfos points out that there's a problem here. We quoted one of them. It's number two on the sheet. The Gemara in Nida, among other places, says, Kol HaKosher Lodin Kosher LaHayid, that there is a rule that whoever can testify can be a judge. Whoever can testify can't be a judge. So there are many people who can testify. Right? Give an example, a relative. Right? I can't testify on behalf of my relative. I can't testify against my relative. It's interesting, there are, in terms of secular law, there are, I think England had the law for many years that you could not testify on behalf of your spouse, but you can testify against your spouse. Because if you testify on behalf of your spouse, obviously it's suspect. But if you're testifying against your spouse, right? Why would you do it if it wasn't true? So that was the one English.
I think I'm sorry.
I understand. So in fact, I think. Right, right. No, if they drowned, then they were not sinful. If they floated,
they weren't witches.
Right.
They were natural.
Right. If they floated, then they were witches. It was a no-win situation.
Right.
Trial by ordeal was something that we never supported. So. I think there's an Agatha Christie about this. I don't know if anybody ever reads Agatha Christie.
I do.
Okay. So wasn't there an Agatha Christie where it was all a setup where the wife testified against the husband and then she was proven to have purged herself and he got off, but the whole thing was a setup. She was just testing against him, right? Right? Mm-hmm. Is that correct? Okay. Good. Duly noted. Right? So we believe, no, that relatives can't testify for or against one another in one case or another, no matter what. And in fact, the Gemara makes a point that the reason we don't allow it is not because we think anybody's lying here. Right? The Gemara says Moshe couldn't testify on behalf of Aaron, even though we know Moshe Rabbeinu would never lie. This is just a rule. You cannot testify on behalf or against a relative. So, similarly, you can't be a judge in a case that involves a relative. Right? If somebody is known to be a horse thief, right, so we would not let them testify. Similarly, we would not let them be a judge. Right? There is a rule about this. Now, as we sort of mentioned, there is two different categories of people that we don't allow to testify. There's a category of people that we don't allow them to testify because we think they're liars. Horse thieves. Horse thieves that we think are liars. There's another category of people who we don't allow them to testify because that's just the rule. It's got nothing to do with, we don't think that they're lying, right? As we said in the case of Moshe and Aaron, we're not suspect that someone's going to lie here. But that's just the basic rule. And there's a big difference between the two of them, not to get too far off the topic, but in cases of Aguna, classic cases of Aguna, right? Running long sheets. Right. So what the classic case of an Aguna would be a man goes out on business and disappears, never seen from again. Right? Now the wife doesn't know. Is she still married? Is she not married? She's in a very difficult situation. So the Gemara tells us that we are very lenient in those cases. I mean, generally, we require two witnesses to prove something. If one witness comes forward and says that he saw that the man has passed away, that would be enough. Even if it's not a kosher witness, even if the person never saw it. If a witness comes forward and says that I was in a bar, and I heard this guy say that I killed so-and-so, that's enough. However, we only go as far as to allow people that we don't allow them to testify for just general policy reasons, relatives, right? However, people we think are liars, we don't accept them in that case. So therefore, it's important to know, why don't you accept somebody? The most famous case, which is somewhere on the border, are non-Jews. We don't accept non-Jews' testimony. The question is why? Is that just a general rule? For example, women. We don't allow women to testify. It's not because women tell the truth less than men tell the truth. Right? Because people tell the truth and people lie in both categories. Right? The question is, however, you know, there's a general rule that women don't testify. So, is that the same with non-Jews or no? Is it that usually when we take an oath, we swear in God's name, we fear. A non-Jew who does not believe in God will not fear. So therefore, there's a concern they're not going to tell the truth. So that's a discussion. Why is it they're not allowed to? And therefore, that would play out in the case of the Aguna. Right? And this was a major issue after 9/11. After 9/11... some of the people who came forward with important information weren't necessarily Jewish. They were co-workers. That was an issue. So going back to our case here. So the general rule is that somebody who's not allowed to testify is not allowed to judge. It doesn't make a difference whether they're not allowed to testify because we are concerned about them telling the truth or if it's totally unrelated. That's just the rule. Period. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't testify for Aaron and Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't judge Aaron. Either way. So based on that rule, one would think that a woman could not judge. Just like a woman cannot testify, therefore a woman would not be able to judge. So how does the pasuk tell us that Devorah was judging? That is the question that Tosfos is dealing with. So let's do the Tosfos inside. So the Gemara is going, Kol ha-kosher lodum kosher lo'ayin. Whoever is allowed to judge can also testify. Vim tohare isha v'ksher lodum. V'ksiv v'devara v'hi shofta es Yisrael. But how can you tell me this? Don't we know that a woman can be a judge? Because it says in the Pasuk a woman can be a judge. And still a woman can testify. How does that work? Right? So wouldn't it seem from all of these cases that there is a similarity that just like women can judge, they should be allowed to testify as well? So how does this rule work? The Gemara in Gittin tells us, in fact, that a woman is not allowed to testify. So how can she be a judge? So Tosfos is going to offer three answers. One, the Hankama, Ko Ish HaKosher Ladin Kosher Lahayin. One is this rule that whoever is allowed to testify is allowed to also judge only applies to men. Any man, any male that is allowed to judge will be allowed to testify and vice versa. However, women, this does not apply. Women are not allowed to testify. However, women are allowed to judge. Answer number one. Answer number two. Inami. Nehide binidunin havi isha b'kal mikal malka midayanim eina isha b'kal. The second answer is that no. It applies to both of them, and just like women can't testify, they also can't judge. Well, we can't say that so easily. Doesn't it say here that Devorah judged? But Devorah ha'isadon al-pi ha-dibor. That Devorah, this was an exception to the rule, that God came down himself and said she could be a judge. Right? Therefore, this was the exception to the rule. However, in general, women cannot judge. Answer number two. Answer number three, inami. The third possibility is women cannot judge. However, you have to read our pasuk a little differently. When it says that she judged, it doesn't mean that she judged. It means that people would come forward to her, and she would say, this question is based on the following law. She would set forth the law, and based on that, people will be able to figure out their problems. And not that she actually decided on her own that this is what has to be. Yishan posa isha ladun. And in fact, in the Gemara Yerushalmi, it says clearly that a woman cannot judge. Is the yalfim of amdushnei anashim? Sheni me'al pishnayim edim. Is the yalfim of yashiru shnei anashim b'machadam. So, he says that there are actually psukim which would indicate that way. So in fact, in the Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch in his parish, in his commentary to the Torah, brings this down and has a serious discussion whether women are allowed to be judges or not. And that is a question of how do you understand this pasuk. If you understand the pasuk literally, that she was a judge, so either you have to say she's allowed to, or this for some reason was an exception. If you read the pasuk that when it says that she judged, it doesn't mean that she judged, it means that she taught classes. That would be the case, you would follow it otherwise. So I think the general rule that we follow here is 2 out of 3. 2 out of 3 answers assume not that way. Therefore, I do not know of cases of women who are judges on Beis Din. But this is a very important, there's a very serious discussion about it right here. Okay. So she was sitting under the palm tree, and that she would do. It's a little bit of an odd place. Why was she sitting under a palm tree? Why couldn't she sit in a classroom? Why couldn't she sit in the social hall? Why wasn't there any better place for her to sit? So the Gemara in number 3, in the Megillah, makes Megillah's Yudalad comments on that. It says as follows. V'hi yosheves tachas tomer dvorah. Maishna tachas tomer dvorah. Amar Rav Shimon ben Avshalom mishum yichud. So the reason was that there is something called the Isser Yichud, that a married woman should not be alone with a man in a private setting. Therefore, sitting under a tree is not private. People would walk by on a regular basis. That's why she chose to hold her court, whether it be literally or figuratively, under the Talmud Dvar. Davar Acher, second answer. This is less practical. Ma tamar zeh ein lo elo lev echad. Just like every palm has one palm heart. So this is to indicate that everybody at this point was focused on God. This is a midrashic approach to it. Okay, so Devorah is now in charge. And she's a Navi, she's a prophetess. So what happens? Pasuk Vav, let's carry on. Vatishlach vatikol v'arok ben Avinoam. Mikedesh Naphtali, Vatomer Elov, Alot Siva the Noyal Israel, Lechu Mashach the Bahar Tavor, Lakhta Imcho Aseres Alafimish Bibne Naphtali, Ubne Zvulun. So she calls out to Barak ben Avi Noam. Who's Barak ben Avi Noam?
Her husband.
Now, assuming we accept that opinion, that Barak and Lapidus are the same person, and in fact, the person that she's calling to is her husband. It's a little strange on some levels. For example, where is she located? Where is her tree located?
In Ephraim.
Right, in Ephraim. Where is Ephraim on the map? Does anyone know? Ephraim is on the Jordan, right? Kind of middle towards the south. He's located where? Oh, we have a map. Right? Okay, there we go. There's Ephraim. Where's Naphtali? Naphtali should be up here. Mm-hmm. Right? So they aren't really next to each other at all. It's a little bit of a strange marriage.
You can call out.
Right. So there's Ephraim, right, yeah. There's Naphtali. There seems to be a, assuming they're married, you'd expect them to be living a little closer than Naphtali and Ephraim. So it's just worth noting that according to that opinion, one would have to probably look into that a little bit more. So she calls up and she says that she has received a nevuah, a prophecy, and the prophecy was that Barak should gather 10,000 men from Naphtali and Zebulun. I guess we should point out to the men, where is Zebulun? It's when you offer you to get it. You'll know better for next time. Right, so I think when we get there, we'll find that Zebulun should be next to Naphtali. Right? Naphtali and Zvulun are right next to each other.
Okay.
There you go. Take a word for it.
Okay.
So they're right next to each other. They're both located up north in what is now actually part of it's Lebanon already, if you look. So, and they said that you can gather 10,000 people specifically from those Shvatim and they will be victorious. And what should you do with it? Pasuk Zion. Umashachti alecha el nachal kishon es sisra tsar tsava yavin ves richvo ves hamono v'nasati v'yodecha. And God says, I will arrange that Sisra, their general, will come with all of his chariots, everything to the nachal kishon, to the valley of Kishon, the Kishon Valley, and you will fight them there and you will be victorious. Now it's a good thing that he brings everybody, because if he brings everybody and you're victorious, you're done with it. If he only brings part of the people, you've got part of the people to worry about still. What is Barak's reaction? Vayomer eleha Barak imtelchi imi v'halachti v'imlo selchi imi lo elech. Honey, if you come with me, I will go. However, I will not go myself. So the prototypical henpecked husband here cannot do anything on his own, and he says he will only go out to war if Devorah comes with him. What's her response? Tess, Vatomar, Haloch Elech Imach, Ephes, Ki Losi Yatifatcho al Haderach Asherata Halech, Ki Biad Isha Yimkor Adonai Yisra, Vatokam Devorah Vatelchim Barak Kecha. She says, okay, if you're insistent, I will go. However, this was wrong. Therefore, the ultimate victory will not be the way that you expect it to be, but rather a woman will be the person who will be the ultimate, who will provide the ultimate salvation, and with that she heads up to Kadesh, to where he was, and that's all.
She doesn't think it's going to be her.
No.
Oh, I know.
You don't gotta ruin it for everybody. Not everyone saw the movie already, you know. Yitzhak Barak asks, "Who invests now? Tali Ketchav, Ayal Baraglo, Vasaras Alfa Yishma Tali Modavar." Okay, so he goes out and he lets out the call to Zvulun and Naphtali. They provide him with 10,000 people. They go to Kadesh, and Devar is there as well. Now we get a new member of the story. The Chever Hakeni Nifrad Mikayin Bimei Chovei Chosei Moshe VeYet Oholo Ad Emon Betzananim Asher Es Kadesh. Not far from there was a fellow named Chever Hakeni. Keni means that he is a descendant of Bnei Kayin. Who are the Kenis? They are the children of Chovev Chosei Moshe, better known as Yitro, correct? So if you remember, when Moshe is trying to convince his father-in-law to stay, he offers up that in the event that you stay with us, we'll give you a nice piece of land, etc. He doesn't buy it. But still, this piece of land went over to the descendants of Yisro. Therefore, the descendants of Yisro were living kind of in the middle over there. So that's an exception to the rule. Yisro had 7 different names for some reason. So again, I'm... Right. So. Listen, we obviously need to make drushes. but beyond that obvious answer, I think that the general assumption is that a person's name represents what the person is. We know that fact from Bereshit, that it says that Adam HaRishon came and went on naming the animals. Right? It's nice, but it doesn't sound something that's worthy of a pasuk. So the idea of, I think Ramban says this, it's almost obvious that, no, the name represents the character. By looking at the animals and seeing what they were, they'll say, this is A. This is a Nahash. This is a Kof. This is an Ari. He just went through them. So somehow we always believe that the name somehow represents the person. I guess another good example is the Pasuk. V'noach matza chen v'nei Hashem. And Noach found chen. We know with Chayn, it found pleasure, shall we say. Right? The letters Noach and Chayn happen to be the same. There's definitely a relationship between this. So, Pi Kabbalah, they speak about the importance when you name a child, that you know that the name is going to have an effect on the child's entire life, etc. So there are people out there who have many different aspects of their personality. Yisro, for sure. Yisro went through many different stages in his life, right? He was a priest of Avodah Zarah, he rejected it all. He was an advisor to Paro. Again, one could say that based on the different aspects of this person's life, you know, at different times he's known in his different names. Or you can say, yeah, so that's how it is. That's another possibility. But if I had to answer the question, it would be based on that. I didn't have to kind of shrug. So, for some reason, we're told that Chever Hakeni lives not far from there. And we'll find out later on why that's relevant. Pasuk Yudeis, Vayagidu L'Sisra Ki Ala Barak Ben Avinoam Har Tavar. So Sisra gets word that Barak and his 10,000 men have crossed Har Tavar, Mount Tavar, and they're heading towards Nachal Kishon. Pasuk Gimel, Vayaz Eik Sisra Es Kol Rechbo. Shameos Rechev Barzel Ves Kol Ha'am Asher Ito Mecharosha Sagoyim El Nachal Kishon. So Sisra takes everything he's got, all of his 900 chariots, all of his people, and he goes from Charosha Sagoyim, where we know that he was originally stationed, and he goes to Nachal Kishon. So we're lined up, everyone's on their side. Yudal V'tomer Dvar El Barak Kum kizeh hayom asher nosan Adonai Yisro biyodecha, havo Adonai yotzo lefanecha, vayered Barak mehar Tavor v'asar salofim yishar from. The Dvar says the time is right. Attack. God will give him over to you. So Barak and his 10,000 people attack. Vayom Adonai Yisro ves kol harecha ves kol hamachna lefichero lefnei Barak vayered Yisro me'amerkava vayosur aglov. And in fact, there is great confusion on Sisera's part, and his entire army and all of his chariots fall to the sword of Barak, and Sisera jumps off his chariot and makes a run for it. Ubarak radaf achri harechev achri hamachane ad charosha sagoyim vayipol kol machane Sisera leficher vonishar ad echoy. So if you can imagine this, so again, originally they were encamped in Charosha Sagoyim. They went to Nachal Kishon. The battle's in Nachal Kishon. They retreat. Where do they retreat to? Obviously back to their base in Charosha Sagoyim. Barak and his men pursue all the way back, and besides wiping out the people, he wipes out the entire encampment as well. And there's nothing left of Sisera. The only thing that's left of Sisera at this point is Sisera, right. Sisera himself has made, like in all stories like this, he has gotten into his escape pod, and he is off and running on his own. And because Barak and his army are pursuing the army back to Nachal Kishon, no one is pursuing Sisera. He has made it away, supposedly safely at this point. Pasuk is Zion. So where does Sisera go? The Sisera Nosferagov El Ohel Yael Eshes Chaver Hakeni. Kishom Bein Yovin Mel Chatzor Bein Beis Chaver Hakeni. So he runs to the tent of Yael, who is married to this Chaver Hakeni, who we know of from earlier. And there seems to be a peace treaty between her husband and the king, Yavin, who, if you remember, Sisera works for. So this is what we would call nowadays a safe house. And he runs there knowing that he will be protected because there is a treaty here. Vateitze Yael likras Sisera, vatomei lo, Sura Adoni, Sura Eli Altira, vayasa eleho ola vatechaseu basmicha. So she says, come in, don't worry. Don't be afraid, I'll take care of you. Takes him in, and she covers him basmicha. What is a smicha?
Blanket.
So smicha literally is a blanket. Taking a look at the Medrash, though, the Medrash says that is one way of reading it. There's only one way we wouldn't get a Medrash out of it. The Medrash in Vayikra, out of all the odd places, Vayikra Rabba, Vateitze Yael likras Sisera, Vatechaseu basmicha. Number four. Mahu basmicha, Rabbanan. The Hacha Amri, the Sudra. So the first thing is the same with the Sudra. Sudar is a... Have you heard of Kinyan Sudar? Right. I went at a wedding. So at a wedding at the Chosin's Fish, there is a Kinyan. It's called a Kinyan Sudar. You think a Sudar is literally a handkerchief. It's a piece of material. Right? So a Kinyan Sudar is when the Chosin, or the father, picks up the handkerchief. That's the Kinyan Sudar. It's a Kinyan done with a piece of cloth. So the first translation, the Rabbanan say, what does smicha? It means sudra, it means a piece of cloth, a blanket. That was the obvious answer. The Rabbanan did Taman Amri, other rabbis say, the Mishachah, a different type of blanket. Amar Reish Lachis, Chazarnu Akol Mikra Volatzinu Klishish Mash Smicha. So I'll tell you the truth, I looked throughout the entire Tanakh and I never see a smicha anyplace else. No place you see a blanket called a smicha. So ma smicha? What's a smicha? Shemi ko shemi. Or shemi ko. My name is here. God puts his name on this. What? What's he putting name on? Shemi meir aleha sho nogaba oso rasha. In fact, that this is testimony that when Yael was together with Sisera, nothing happened. He did not lay a finger on her. As the opinion of the Medrash, one might have thought, Sisera was alone with Yael, Eshes Chaver Hakeni, nothing to worry about. The truth of the matter is, that's a minority opinion. If you look at the Gemara, number 5, in Nazir, it's quite the opposite. Amar Rav, Lo'olam Yasek Odom B'Torah V'Mitzvos, Afilo Shelo Rishmon. People should always do mitzvahs, whether it's for the right reasons, for the wrong reasons. Should always do it. Don't worry so much about that. If you have the proper kavanas, there you should go. You should do whatever you're supposed to do for good reasons, bad reasons. Why? Shemitoh shalom lishman bo lishman. Because if you start doing it for the wrong reasons, eventually you'll do it for the right reason. If you're not doing it for any reason, you're going to keep on not doing it for any reason. There's no potential upside. Ela Eimar Kemitzvah Shelo Lishma Dixiv Tevorach Minoshim Yal Eishas Chevra Akeni Minoshim Ba'ol Tevorach. So the next parak, not going to get there probably. The next parak is what's called Shiras Devora. Devora, at the end of this victory, has a Shira. She sings out, and that is the Haftorah for Parshas. Anybody? Remember?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure when they go out of
Mitzrayim.
Right. Bishalach.
When we do Azyashir, so the Haftorah for the Shira Sayyam is the Shiras Devora. So in it, she recounts the story, and she says, Tevorach minoshim yael eishas chever arkeni. Minoshim ba'olal tevorach. That Yael, the wife of chever arkeni, should be more blessed than even the women in the tents. What does that mean? Man noshim sheba'olal. Who are these women in the tents? Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. That she is even greater than Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. Strong words. Amar Yochanan Sheva Beiras Bal Oso Rosha Beoso Shah. Shema Bein Ragreha Kara Nafal Shachav. What did she do? She gave herself over to Sisera in order to get him to relax. This is seen as a very positive thing. So in fact, this, in terms of Pshat, it's the exact opposite of the Medrash. But the Gemara is making the point that even though mitzvahs don't have to be lishma, aveiros have to be lishma. And there are certain times when people do things that on the face of it are an aveira. However, in that particular time, they would seem to be the correct thing to do. So what's an example of this? This doesn't come up too often. A similar case would be Esther. Esther is a well-known case. Yaakov lying to Yitzchak. Right, and saying that he was Esav. That's another example that Yaakov was not able to, there could not be any reason to do this other than it was the right thing to do at that time. The fact that him and Esav didn't necessarily get along all that well could not come into play. Aveira always has to be lishma, it has to be for the good reasons. Nowadays, these don't come up too often. The only example I heard in recent times was people who throw stones at cars in Israel on Shabbos. So, we don't support this at all. Let me make this clear. Say that for the tape as well. This is a bad thing. But even if it was the right thing, the people would have to be doing it purely for the idea that I think this will stop Chilul Shabbos. Obviously, it doesn't stop Chilul Shabbos. It doesn't. Throwing stones at people does not make them love Orthodox Judaism more. It practically is a bad approach. But even if it was, which it isn't, so that would be the story. It's interesting, related to this perhaps, not necessarily 100%, would be the next Gemara. Look at number 6. So, B'nei Banov Shel Sisera Lomdu Torah B'Yerushalayim. Sisera had grandchildren who went on to learn Torah in Yerushalayim. You wouldn't have suspected it, huh? How's that for Yichus? This is not unlike, this is actually next to Gemara that says, has the famous law that B'nai Banav Shel Haman Lamdu Torah B'nai Brak. Haman had grandchildren who were learning in Kollel as well. It's interesting, some people take that as a knock on the people who live in B'nai Brak. They're B'nai Banav Shel Haman. You can really read it two ways. But the simple shot is it's a positive statement, it's not a negative statement. So this is very interesting. Now, what this leads to is an important discussion, which is not practically important, but what was the status of Yael and her husband after this? Assuming, not like the Medrash, assuming like the Gemara, which indicates that she in fact slept with Sisera. If a woman sleeps with a man other than her husband willingly, at a certain level this was willingly, she can no longer remain married to him. So there's a discussion. Now, a more basic question is, who said Andy's people are Jewish?
Right.
It is very unclear that Yael was Jewish.
Wasn't she a Cainy? That means she's not a Jew.
Well, he was a Cainy.
Yeah.
Right? But could have converted, etc. We always speak so highly of Yael, better than Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. There's no strong indication at any point that she was Jewish. The closest thing is that if you assume that the Bnei brothers and sisters that we're talking about are perhaps children that was conceived with Yael, and they went on to learn Torah, that would perhaps at a certain level indicate that she was Jewish. But that's a stretch.
Shouldn't they say she wasn't
Jewish? So there isn't there?
Isn't it a stretch that they were sleeping together?
That's what the Gemara says.
Alone
that.
Together, but
so again, if you look at Parak Hey, we just want to look quickly at the key pasuk would be pasuk Hazayim. Bein Ragleha Karat Nafal Shachar. Between her legs, he bent down. He fell down. He lied. Bein Ragleha Karat Nafal. That is the pasuk that they point to, which would indicate it.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you do not have to read it that way. It could be that he fell dead. Right. Right. That would be another, perhaps even better reading of it. Which is why you could take it both ways, but that is the pasuk question. Even though here in Parak Dalet there's nothing that indicates that way, you're right. In pasuk Hey, you do have that. So it's an interesting discussion as to the status of Yael. We talk about a Avera Lishma, right, that she's doing this. It's assumed that, you know, that and we're learning from her, your knee-jerk reaction would assume that she's Jewish. However, there's no real strong indication that you'd have to say that way. Yes?
If she was, like, not Jewish, mm-hmm. What's her big motive in going and doing this? Because, you know, she didn't fall instantly in love with the guy.
She clearly did not fall in love with the guy, as we'll see in a few psukim.
She doesn't seem like such a Nazi that anybody that she's like, hey, come on in, I'm waiting.
Maybe right. They come
well,
out and kill.
No, that's definitely...
What's her motive?
Right.
What's her motive in killing him?
Right, the question was... Right, that's...
Why did she want to kill him if her husband and he were...
Oh, these are all very good questions.
Were allies?
So the Malbim discusses this. If they were allies, what's she doing killing him? That's not a very neighborly thing to do now, is it? So, what the Malbim answers, and I don't think it's the strongest answer, but it'll have to do, I think, is that it indicates that there was a treaty between Yavin and Chayver. There's no treaty necessarily between Sisera and Chayver. I'm not thrilled with that answer because, okay, but Sisera was Yavin's general. You know, you would assume they would cover that as well. And whoever wrote up the treaty, whoever the lawyers were, you can imagine they probably would have tried to pick up on that. Right, but that's your point is a very strong point. The fact that she was willing to put herself out to kill him and clearly wanted him dead would indicate that perhaps she was Jewish.
But like that guy with Korach, you know, the wife says, hey, if Korach gets in, what do you got?
What's it for you?
Stays in, you know.
Right.
So what,
Owen Ben Pallas'
you know,
wife.
What's the
Mrs. Owen.
Investment?
Right. What's the upside
what's
here?
What's the ROI?
Well, I think I heard that Canes were also on good terms with the Jews.
Canes were in excellent terms with the Jews, that's for sure. In fact, we see in Shmuel Aleph, right? In Shmuel Aleph, when Shaul attacks the Amalekis, he calls out to the Canes, you better get out of here because we're coming. Because the Canes were sort of embedded in the Amalekis. So clearly we were in good terms with them. So that's for sure. On the other hand, it seems that there is a treaty going the other way at this point. And also, it seems that Chayva wasn't living with everybody else. Most of the kings were actually in Yehuda. So, but Yael herself is questionable as to...
But they had an issue where she took him into the faith house, he then seduced her, raped her, and then she reacted to that?
No, because it clear... You see, she welcomes him in.
But you can offer someone into your house to give them refuge, and then if they do something negative to you, then...
But that's not what it seems at all. I mean, she tries to... She seems to be the person who is encouraging the action. Right? She gives him to drink, she... And then...
How long was Marlene behind the scenes?
Number one, a few pieces of evidence. First of all, Laura does say, yes, Shai and Koresh have a future. Okay? So she might know that that's going to happen. Secondly, in terms of geographically speaking, she goes, okay, with her husband, Keisha, okay? So if possible, she is in cahoots with Yael. So she is actually going. She may actually know Yael. We don't really know that.
I get it.
Geographically, that's where they live. They live in Kadesh.
Well, of course, but that's where the war is. She goes to Kadesh.
Right.
Because we're having a war here. There's a war schedule. We don't want to miss it.
Right.
Right. That's where she's going. Okay? And, of course, Yael has to live there because that's where Sisera's running.
Right.
Right. Sisera's not running to Eilat from there.
I'm just saying,
right.
we don't necessarily know and, if they have
right.
some kind of
there's no indication that it was. Clearly, there was a Nevuah here. That Devorah knew that a woman would be involved, right?
And Devorah said, "I mean, we don't necessarily know that."
What?
I think she might have made a plan. First of all, the fact that we have
plan is that in the event that there is a victory and Sisera hops off his thing and he makes a run for it, encourage him to come to you.
No, number one, first of all, it's strange. We said before that Yael is willing to put the life out to save the Jews, right? Why?
Unless she's Jewish. If she's Jewish, it's not that
right, so
weird.
I think there might be some kind of connection, those two pieces of evidence, the fact that, number one, if you say that maybe she wasn't in the Ruach, maybe she had some kind of plan.
Right. What bothers me about that, the reason that I'm not quick to accept that, is because you would have to assume that the plan was, in the event that there's a victory and he's the only guy who escapes and runs to you, then all that had to happen, right?
Where she set up as a spy, because where she, you know what I'm saying, where they were situated.
But still, the key was he. Sisera ran to her.
Well, no, he ran by and she said, come in, turn.
Well, let's take a look at
the
circle. Is that true?
Yeah.
No, go back. Yud Zion. The Sisera Nospa Rag of El Ohel Yael, Asha Sever Akemi. Right, that's a.
But I still think that she was willing to risk her
life. No,
there has to be some kind of connection between the two people.
Right, so the easiest answer is she's Jewish.
Or they.
Right. So there's a simple answer. That's the simplest. If she's not Jewish, then we can begin to consider other possibilities. So.
It's the same kind of thing. Why would Sisera come with his 900 chariots into this wet valley? I mean, it's like God is doing something here.
Right.
It's really, you know, mm-hmm. they're supposed to be victorious.
Right.
Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense to go down into
right.
the mud
right.
in the valley when you could be in the highlands.
The hand of God, the hand
yeah.
of God is clear here.
So then, the same with Yael.
Yeah, because
right.
for one item, and, you know, why would she do that?
Why would she do it?
Right. But other than that, all the other things are pointing that she was Jewish.
Otherwise, why wouldn't there be a lineage for her? I mean, you'd give her a kavod, saying Yael, bad, bad, bad.
That could be mm-hmm. Maybe that's why she's not Jewish.
That's what I think. She wouldn't be
right.
Jewish.
But we name our kids after her.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
she's our
like
heroine.
Alexander
she is
also.
A heroine.
Right.
No
yeah.
what.
Right. See, you hope she's Jewish based on that. Right.
But they named children Alexander.
Right, but that was a historical event where they announced they were named their kids after him. Right. No, but Shimon HaTzadik announced we're going to name our kids after Alexander. Okay, let's move on a little bit. Name kids after Nimrod also these days. That's not all good. Okay, well, we ought to prosecute your test. Vayomer, Eleho, Hashkini nomad, Mayim Kitsa Macy, Vatiftach es Noda Holova, Tashkeu Vatachaseu. He asks for water, she gives him milk. Him milk, the idea is that she wants him.
Sleep.
Right? More milk tires a person out.
I mean, this is plants.
What?
This was totally planned. She was standing by the door. He was running by. She grabbed him.
No, she knew what she was doing.
Oh, absolutely.
She thought there was milk in the house in the refrigerator.
There was no refrigerator.
I'm just like, hey. That's why it had to be planned. She went in
the house. It's interesting. That has to be a little bit of a dangling modifier here. But Tashkei Vatichaseyu, and she covered him.
Maybe it was shoulder.
So the,
yeah.
So she covered him, but didn't it say that in the previous pasuk? Some people say Vatichaseyu means the bottle of milk. She closed it right away so it wouldn't get bad.
No, they had the skins.
Right? So that is noted. If you're going to raise it, I'll point that out. Vayomer leah, amot pesach olam, vayom isha vo v'sheilech. Omar, yesh po ish v'amart ayim. So he said, okay, I'm going to take a little nap now. You go and stand by the door, and if anyone asks, is anyone here, you answer no. Good, she got it. Chafal v'tikach yoyel ishas chever es yisad ha'olam v'atosan es ha'makeves v'yodon. Batolo elav barot batiska es hayosei berakoso atis nacha aras v'hu nirdam v'yoif hayamos. And in a well-known scene, she takes a tent peg and a hammer, and she nails his head, and he dies. Sorry, if I'd be chayva, I'd be a little nervous here. Hinei, we'll get back to that a little bit. So why was it necessary for her to kill her that way? Couldn't she have pulled out a knife or something? Wouldn't that have been a little less messy? Right. Hinei barak rodef es sisra v'teitza yalik krasova tomoro lech erecha etz isha shia asher atam evakesh v'yomo elav hinei sisra nofel meis v'yosei barak raso. So she comes running out to Barak and she says, look what I got. He comes in and he sees the scene. Let's take a look at the Yalkut Shmoni at number 7, which discusses, it's a well-known comment, why she found it necessary to do this. Yodo le'yasei tishlachna, ein yad elasmol. She used her left hand. Shema af yodi yasta eretz, yamini tefa shamayim. Oma roma toshiv yotov yiminecha. So in her left hand she had the peg, right hand she had the hammer, as you'd imagine. Omer, Lo'yelos al yodecha, right? We put your tefillin on yodecha, that's your yad ko, your weaker hand, which is most cases, left hand. Zer she'omar akosav yodeh ha'sholcho ba'kisha zu yael, shol harago b'kli zayin, ela b'yasei. When we say in Eish Yisrael yodeh ha'sholcho ba'kisha, that's referring to Yael, who did not use a sword or any weapon, but rather a tent peg. Tiv yoda le'yasei tishlachna. V'neima lo harago b'chei zayin. Why didn't she do it? V'kayim ha'shenema lo yekli gever al isha. Because the Gemara says this would have been a problem of cross-dressing. That a man can wear women's clothing and vice versa. That a sword was seen as something that people wore at the time. Therefore, she did not do that, but rather, she took a tent peg. How literally do we take this?
She's for sure Jewish. She's
not really Jewish. I was going to say, to be this from she has to eat a bala tshuva made me a ger. That's the only people get this from.
Maybe she's practical. She had a hammer.
What?
She wasn't armed.
Well, right, but the question that was asked here is, but she had a hammer.
Why?
But if I had a hammer.
for not somebody who wore, but for just
looking
or putting
the tent peg. Right, and the question
is,
right.
How do you
get to
a
woman
who's
right
with that?
I think this is graphic enough at this point. I think we go so look, Rav Moshe Feinstein, believe it or not, has a little piece on this in the Igros Moshe. V'had Isa v'pirish Rashi Nozer Nun Zayin v'yal charakto l'sisra b'yasei v'lo b'chli zayin mitzad Isa kli gever v'hu mitargum yonasan b'shoftim v'isa v'yalkot shmoni k'ditzin Rebbe Kiva Eger v'gilin Hashas hu l'arog acher she'ahoya kvar k'kofus mitzad ha'yefes, v'tardemu l'hapil l'av Hashem, v'hoya l'zman l'vakesh yosei l'hargo. Said, this is not something that she had to do. Said that really, if there was any danger, she could obviously could have taken a sword and killed him with it. However, he was out like a light. So let's be serious. She's allowed to give over her body to him, and she's not allowed to use a sword? Isn't that kind of strange? You know, if you're going to allow something, if something had to go here, I'd let her carry the sword. He said what he's supposed to learn from this is that even though it was a difficult situation, it's admirable to the extent possible. She tried to limit the amount of averas that she did, indicating that what she did, which would seem to be a more serious avera, had to be done. This is a woman who was very religious. She did whatever she could to be with. However, it was absolutely necessary to do what she had to do. That's the point behind it. It wasn't so much to talk about the importance of driving pegs to people's heads. It's more important to discuss it, to realize the type of person that Yael was, that when she did whatever else she might have done, that was something that she had no choice about. As the time is up, we'll just finish the parak. So Yochin at that point became subservient to Bnei Yisrael, and Bnei Yisrael kept up with Canaan, and they kept on fighting them until the point that Canaan, instead of them being under Canaan in fact was under them. The next parak we'll just mention is the Shiras Devora, and it's worth reading. It's a nice haftarah. It helps us, as we've seen, understand the parak a little better. And it ends up, it says, "Ketzeis Hashem v'kuvraso atishkot haaretz arba'im shana." That this is of course the same idea. For 40 years, everything was good under Devora. Devora passes on. People do bad. We deal with it next time we meet again. I think next week is Tisha B'Av. So we're not being at Tisha B'Av. We're not on a Torah and Torah. We believe this is Torah. So I guess the following Tuesday. Okay? Good.
When do you go back?
I go back on August 13th.
I'd like to stay long.
Can you change the day? How's Thursday? Is Thursday good?
Thursday, yeah.
Thursday? Yes? Yes. So if you can get together and pick another date that works for everybody, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. How about Monday?
I don't think we have to take this.